From the campus of Stanford University, this is Schools In.
They believe that what we're being told is everything they need to know, and they just pay attention to that.
You actually have to teach the teachers how to teach for innovation.
With your hosts, Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope.
Welcome to Schools In. I'm Denise Pope, senior lecturer at the Graduate School of Education here at Stanford, and I'm with my co-host, Dan Schwartz, who is the dean of the Graduate School of Education.
Denise, English major Pope. Great to see you.
Yes, I was an English major. Always fun to see you.
And today we're talking about literature.
Yes, we are.
And we're talking about the best literature on earth.
Which is the young adult literature.
It is the best.
Yes.
I think I like the 4 and 5 year old literature the best.
What's your favorite book?
When I was a kid?
Yeah.
As a young adult, it had to be The Phantom Tollbooth.
Nice.
I love this book. And so, I don't know, I'm 12, 14 maybe, and I get sick, and I ask my mom to sit next to me and read The Phantom Tollbooth, which I think is, it's very endearing, although I think it just confused her. It was like, what are you doing, son? I haven't done this in 8 years.
Oh, but she thought you were really regressing?
I don't know what was going on.
But you wanted that as comfort.
I did. It was a great book. I've never seen any movie, any TV show about it. It was completely self-contained.
Don't see the movie.
How about you?
You probably haven't heard of this, but this was one of my all-time favorites. It's called The Last of the Really Great Wang Doodles. And it is written by a very famous person, but she wrote it under her married name. So the person who wrote it is Julie Edwards. That's her married name. Do you know who she really is?
No.
She is really Julie Andrews.
Oh, is that right?
So not only could this woman sing and dance and play Mary Poppins, she also wrote one of my all-time favorite books. And
that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
But, you know, isn't Wang Wang Doodle a Wang Doodle Doodle a song?
I don't know, but I'm sure it has nothing to do with the book.
Okay.
I was trying to think of what this book was even about, but it just gives me this warm, fuzzy feeling, and I can't even tell you the plot anymore. But I just, in my head, I created this world based on what she wrote, and I have very strong feelings for how it should look. And that's kind of like you. I never want to see the movie because I don't want anyone to ruin my vision of this land and this the Wang Doodle.
So do you have 6 books like this, or is it there's just one?
In fact, this was actually a really hard question for me to answer. I have a ton of favorite, but I was a major reader nerd growing up. All of my siblings and actually my own kids, we all have books. We're all very into books. And I'll tell you one funny story.
Yeah.
We go on vacation, we're all reading, and sometimes we are reading the same books. So the Harry Potter books, when they were coming out, I was reading them out loud to my kids, and I would be so into it that I'd put them to bed, and then I would read ahead 3 chapters because I had to know what was going on. And when we sort of pre-ordered the next book, there were fights over who got it, right?
Wow.
Because we all really loved it. And I would have to pretend to not know things. And they're like, Mom, you read ahead. We know.
They could tell.
You're such a bad liar. So, this is a big thing. And in my house, you actually cannot see the movie until you've read the book first. It's sort of a rule that I've just had with my kids growing up, and it's really important to me. And they're like, how come you don't make Dad read the book? He hasn't had to read the book, because it's like this really important rule that I make them read the book before they see the movies.
Wow, that's really sweet. I think I graduated out of young adult literature too soon.
You went right from there to what?
I think in 8th grade I was reading Anna Karenina. Stuff like that.
In 8th grade, you're reading Anna Karenina.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. Fantasy is not for me.
So you like
my son, in fact, graduated. He started reading business books.
In 8th grade?
Yeah. We're just not a fantasy family.
I'm still a reader. I still need to have a book with me. I still, when I think of going on vacation, it's what book do I get to bring with me to
Really?
Read?
I spend all my time reading for the job. I've had enough.
That's the other kind of reading. This is the fun, exciting, immerse yourself in a world, get lost.
So this is a fundamental difference. I want to go to a movie where they spent $300 million on me of special effects. That's how I want to spend my time.
Well, we are really lucky because we have one of the leading experts on young adult novels.
Yes, we do.
And she actually teaches classes on young adult novels. How fun is that? And we are really lucky to have her here. Her name is Dr. Jennifer Wolfe. She's a senior lecturer at the Stanford Graduate School of Education, and she directs the undergraduate programs at the Graduate School of Education. She's especially interested in helping young people cultivate a love of reading, a woman after my own heart. Yay.
Yes.
And I think English major as well, and also former English teacher. So we all have so much in common.
I'll just sit and listen.
Yeah, Dan, you're left out. We're in like a little love fest here.
I'm going to be reading my Russian novel on the side.
Welcome, Jennifer. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me.
So, should we ask Jennifer her favorite book? We're springing this on you.
Oh, boy. That may be unfair.
Is that too hard?
I'm looking to see if I get a facial expression on this.
Is that too hard?
It's not too hard. I just translate that question in my mind to what is one of my favorite books.
Okay, good.
I get asked this question a lot. So the first book that my parents ever gave me to have for my own was A Wrinkle in Time, which has just had a sort of resurgence with the movie version that Oprah put together recently. And actually, I added it to the reading list for the young adult literature class that I teach this spring because of this kind of resurgence. So it was lovely to revisit it in that way. But the first time I read it, I was in the fifth grade.
So let me ask a really selfish question, and then we'll get back to the show. So I don't know what grade it was, but there were reading groups. And they didn't sort of name what level you were. They didn't go like gold, silver, and bronze. And one group read A Wrinkle in Time. One group read Island of the Blue Dolphins. And one group read The Bronze Bow. Like, which of those was the top, the most advanced reading group?
Dan is not going to say which one he was until you tell him.
Well, Dan will not be surprised to hear that I don't care which group he was in, right? Because I'm very interested in this idea of how we gauge and brand and title readers.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of research that shows that being able to read is good for you. So that seems a given. And we have lots of compelling evidence to show that not being able to read is very bad for you. But we have some even more interesting, at least to me, research about how pleasure reading is good for you. So this gets back to your idea that you just are reading for work all the time, and when you're done with that, you don't have any time left over for pleasure reading. But people who pleasure read, this has a lot of wide-ranging and some unexpected benefits. So then that raises the question, should we teach kids to like reading? We know we should teach them the mechanics of reading, and we know we should teach them the ability to interpret what they read, so Anna Karenina or whatever you were reading when you were four.
In Russian.
Yeah, uh-huh. But we also perhaps should teach them to love reading and to read when they are not with us. And that's where I think young adult literature comes into play and where my interests really lie. So I don't care what group you are in. I would say A Wrinkle in Time probably has the highest Lexile measurement, if that makes you feel better.
No, I think it makes it worse.
Because you know where he was. Come on. You were not Island with the Dolphins either, were you?
I wasn't.
I know. See, so I could have guessed that.
Pin wriggling against the wall.
I will say this. What we do know about homework in elementary school is that it doesn't really correlate with academic achievement, but you know what does?
Reading
for pleasure.
Yep.
Not forced reading. Not like here you have to be in this reading group, Dan Schwartz, but reading for pleasure. You choose. That actually correlates with academic achievement in elementary school.
Why do you think?
Let's ask the expert, okay?
There are a lot of different theories on this, but the ability to know what you like and then select and show advocacy over what you like and then read it seems to have some broad-reaching implications. And there's an interesting and challenging twist to this for those of us who are also English teachers. Krashen's done a lot of work on this out of USC, which is to establish a strong, pleasure-independent reading presence, one of the most important things that you should not do is provide any incentive.
Right.
So that means no counting pages, no counting books, no putting your name up on the board with a star saying I'm a super reader, no grading, no testing. So if we want to teach pleasure reading, right. How do we do that in a classroom setting or outside of a classroom setting? I just think it's a very exciting challenge.
That is so opposite to the way I studied for the SAT.
I bet.
Where it was just a complete ranking points, where you're now reading the red level. And maybe that explains why I go watch expensive movies.
Can I tell a story about my daughter? Taking the SAT, she went in early in the morning, and the final component that she took was the verbal. And she came out. I said, how was it? She said, it was fine. I fell asleep.
Oh.
Then I was like, well, this does not bode well for the scores. Got the score back, 99th percentile. That test does not test your ability to read. It tests your ability to take a test.
Yeah. Or stay awake.
It tests your ability. She said, you know what? I didn't even read the passages. I just went straight to the answers and made my choices.
She's
from there.
A really good guesser. This mm-hmm. is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We are speaking with Dr. Jennifer Wolfe, a specialist in young adult literature. What can we just specify just real quick, young adult, what's the time period that we call that?
There's a lot of debate, but why don't we go with American Library Association's definition, 12 to 18.
12 to 18 is young adult. Okay.
But there, as soon as you put any kind of parameters on that, then sure. that just invites everyone to enjoy the argument about what really is a YA book or reader.
So I'm a parent. I want my kid to love reading. You've convinced me that it does wonders for them. And my kid says, I don't want to do that. I don't want to read. I want to read comic books. You okay with that?
Absolutely. Light reading is okay. iPad reading is okay. Listening to a book on audio is okay. Reading comic books, reading the same book over and over again.
So they don't
free agency is very important in pleasure reading.
Even if I think as a mom this book is so easy and so stupid, that they're really going to get the same benefits out of it as if they read a more challenging book?
But remember, one of the main benefits we want them to get out of it is to experience pleasure in reading as an independent reader. So if they're getting that pleasure out of reading something over and over that's really important to them, regardless of how the parent feels about it, and maybe even because of how the parent feels about it, then yeah. Absolutely.
Okay.
So there was a big transition in my life. I sort of remember this. There was a period where I would go into the library and I'd see all the books and I'd be really excited and I'd be choosing between them which to read. And then somewhere in my life, I go into a library and it makes me nervous because there's all these books I will never read and I won't know them.
Wow.
No, you don't experience that? You don't walk into that?
No, but I can say this. In the Challenge Success research, we ask what you do in your free time, and we have reading for pleasure as one of the choices. And we start this survey with sixth graders, and we do it all the way up to 12th graders. And in sixth grade, reading for pleasure is right there with all the other stuff, you know, playing soccer and, you know, talking with friends and all that. 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, straight down. The line is straight down. So you're probably not alone in kind of that drop off of the excitement. And
Is it because it's being displaced by other forms of reading, or I'm just allowed to do more stuff?
Well, a lot of these kids will say they don't have time, right? Kind of like you said, I have to read for work all the time.
Right.
And they're reading for school all the time. But I don't know.
Well, and there are several different demographics of readers who have different reasons for their reading dropping off. Interestingly, one of the things that research has been consistent across and showing us is that one of the single most important factors in influencing a young person to grow up to be a person who reads independently and for pleasure is that they see an adult they care about reading for pleasure. And another factor that's really important in pleasure reading and independent reading or free reading or sustained silent reading, all these different names that we call it, is that they need to have access. Young readers need to have access to books. And I'm going to say they need to have access to quality books, to contemporary books, to books that they can get their hands or their ears or their eyes on, that are the same books that a lot of other people are reading as well. So access to literature and access to quality literature is a big part of this equation. So some kids, their reading drops off. Some teens, their reading drops off because they're oversaturated with assignments and activities and resources. And some kids, their reading drops off or never builds up because they don't have access to the reading that is going to call to them.
This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We're talking with Dr. Jennifer Wolfe on young adult literature and reading for pleasure and how important it is.
So in my neighborhood, there are sort of like mailboxes and people leave books in them. Mm-hmm. And I've always wondered how much that's used, you know, as a way
to... The free library movement.
Is that what that is?
That's what that's called. So it's a national movement. I'm very interested in it. I want to go back again to the class that I get to teach, the young adult literature class to undergraduates. Their final assignment is to design an intervention, mostly small scale, that supports pleasure reading for young people. And they design really interesting ways of increasing young people's access to reading for pleasure. So we look at the little free library movement and we talk about, so this is a literacy intervention, this is a reading intervention.
Can you explain how it works a little bit?
So you build a tiny little library birdhouse combination structure and you put it somewhere on your property in front. And you put books in it, and there's a little sign that says something like, take a book, leave a book. So that's it. That's the description. So you can imagine that it's hard to measure the effects of this intervention. And it seems that in a lot of cases, what people put in their little free library is books that are really old or they don't care about anymore. So that might have some sort of unincentivizing effect. But here's the part that I wanted to get to. This year, after reading my students' interventions, I was so inspired. I wheeled this table that's down the hall from our offices, Denise, to outside my office. And I took 15 really new, great YA books from my office that I didn't need anymore. And I put them on the table with a sign that said, one, take one. Two, enjoy it. Three, pass it on. And I put little bookmarks in each one that said something about them. I've never had so much fun in my office. Guadalupe Valdez came by and took a book. The guy who empties the recycling bin came by and took a book. Undergraduates, graduate students, international visitors. There are interesting ways to disseminate and increase access to literature.
So do you still read young adult literacy, Denise?
I do.
Even not involving your kids?
I do. And this is the thing. Jennifer has the office next door to me, and she is the master. So I'll go in and I'll say, okay, seriously, like, what's hot? What's like, what am I not going to be able to put down? And she'll hand me something. And what's really fun, the fun part for me, is that I get to come back and talk to Jennifer about it. And some of these are like, woo, kind of controversial and kind of unexpected endings. And I was like, whoa. Wow, I didn't see that coming, you know. So I do, and I also read stuff that my kids read too. You know, like when the Hunger Games trilogy came out, we were fighting over the book so much that I ran to a bookstore and actually got a second copy because I was not willing to wait to see what happened.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. It's like that. So when we come back, we are going to talk more with this expert and book provider to all, Jennifer Wolfe. This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We'll have more with Jennifer next on SiriusXM Insight 121. We translate the research we know about best practices with school, curriculum, and parenting to teachers, administrators, parents, and youth.
You're listening to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope from the campus of Stanford University.
Welcome back to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We are talking today with Jennifer Wolfe, who is an expert on young adult literature and gets to teach a class on young adult literature at Stanford.
So, Jennifer, is it my imagination or is the highest percentage of banned books come from young adult books?
So depending on who's measuring, the answer is yes. It is not your imagination. We are very... As a citizenry, it seems like we're especially concerned about what our young people are reading, and that lands us on a lot of banning or censoring of young adult literature.
And it's because this is kids are old enough now to understand controversial issues, and that's why...
I mean, you would think like 6 to 8 year olds, 4 to 8 year olds, they'd be just as concerned, no?
I would imagine, speaking as a parent and a teacher, that there is just as much concern for the younger kids, but the young adult literature itself has a much higher percentage of controversial topics. Mm. In fact, some people have said that young adult literature sort of exists in order to explore controversial topics, and that's what seems to make the folks who speak out against it nervous.
Also, who's going to ban Peter and the Purple Crayon?
It's Harold. Oh my gosh! Oh Jesus!
Oh God! I'm so embarrassed.
Where credit is due.
I'm so embarrassed.
No, but I mean, there's probably not a whole lot of sex, drugs, and rock and roll you know, books for younger kids. But that's correct. What a lot of the YA stuff is about.
Yes, there are multiple controversial topics, and it raises a host of questions around what can a book do to the reader? And in this case, what can a book do to a teen reader? Do teenagers consult books as instruction manuals? If they read a book about taking drugs, does that make them more likely to take drugs? Does the ending of the book influence how a young person makes decisions going forward? So a lot of developmental tasks sort of merge together with reading tasks, and I think that's what heightens a lot of the concern around who's reading what.
So what's the answer? Because I know that books are pretty influential. Do they cause these behaviors?
So my blanket answer to this is I love reading, and I think reading is really important. And so all of my answers are in the positive, about the positives of reading, and that it has quote, air quotes, no negatives. But a really important YA author, M.T. Anderson, in an exchange one time said, look, if books can do all of these good things, are you also going to argue that they can do nothing bad? Mm-hmm. Does that make any logical sense? So I've tucked that in the back of my brain. But young adult literature, I think, ultimately is concerned – ultimately it's concerned with making money as a publishing industry, but it's also concerned with the well-being and health of young people. So – the books that are written, in addition to being of some really terrific literary quality, are concerned with the healthy development of young people.
So I assume that the young adult literature underrepresents certain segments of the population. For example, there's probably less African-American young adult literature. Is this true? Is there people working to bring in more voices into young adult literature?
Yes, of course it's true. However, I see young adult literature as being one of the most responsive genres in the United States publication. YA literature really pays attention to what the YA readers want and are doing, and they provide a very quick turnaround compared to other genres in response to that. I think it goes all the way back to comic books, when kids could take their pennies and buy a comic book, and in doing that, not only pay the comic book folks, but also could vote with their pennies and say, here's what we want more of or less of. Same with things like Nancy Drew series that have this quick turnaround. So to get back to answering your question, I do think that young adult literature has dealt with issues of underrepresentation for a while. And the Cubberly Lecture guest, Jacqueline Woodson, who came and spoke 2 years ago, she's done a lot of work in this regard, working on the We Need Diverse Books movement. And this year, all of the books that were nominated for the Prince Award for Best Young Adult Novel were either about a character of color or written by a character of color or written by or about a character who's been underrepresented in the past. So there's been a real stepping up in this regard.
This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We're talking with Dr. Jennifer Wolf today about young adult literature. Exciting to hear that it's responsive, exciting to hear that it's alive and well, because there's been some controversy. I don't know. Should we go there? I just heard about Little House on the Prairie books, and these were books that people loved. I actually personally didn't love them, just saying, but that they're now being looked at with a sort of, I don't know, a way to say it, a PC lens. Is this what's happening, Jennifer? What's happening? Tell us.
Well, the Little House on the Prairie books by Laura Ingalls Wilder, based on her actual life experiences, but fictionalized, have been around for a long time. They've been beloved and read widely, and they contain multiple treatments of characters and people and political situations that may have been acceptable at the time that they were written and are largely not considered acceptable or just plain not acceptable at this period in time. So what do we do with books that have been with us for a long time? And there's a lot of nostalgic love for literature, especially for literature for young people. So parents and grandparents want kids to read what they read. But when offensive language and stereotypes are contained in those books, what are you supposed to do? Are you supposed to stop reading the books? Are you supposed to think less of the author? Are you supposed to think less of your own reading history? Or are you supposed to read those books and find a way to talk with young readers about what's contained in them and why we've changed some of our ways of thinking? So that's the controversy as I see it.
Are people trying to ban it?
Recently, the American Library Association renamed an award. There was an award given that was named in Laura Ingalls Wilder's name, and they've changed the name of that award to not contain her name anymore. So they have not censored her books at all. They haven't asked people to stop reading them, but they have asked people to, when and if they do read the books, to consider these issues.
So let me ask you something harder, not socially, but you've read a lot of books. If you read a book, can you tell if it's going to be a winner? Like, can you?
You mean a mega bestseller? What do you mean by winner?
Sufficiently seller.
You know, not a winner, just like make money for the person who wrote it.
No, okay, fine. That it will go down and be a beloved young adult literature book, like Island of the Blue Dolphins.
And how much you love that book.
Never read it. I wasn't in the
group. He wasn't in the group.
I really like Island of the Blue Dolphins, which has a very interesting female of color character at its center and from a very early time in our publishing history. But anyway, we do an exercise in the young adult literature class where I ask students to predict the next mega bestseller, and we look at the bestseller triad of Harry Potter and Twilight and Hunger Games, as Denise was talking about before. And so far, none of us have correctly predicted the next mega bestseller. And so far, there actually has not yet been a book or a series of books that have sold in the way that those three have. But the question you're asking, I think, is a little bit different.
It is. It's more like so one of the great things of being a parent is you get to read to your young child these amazing books. So this is pre-young adult literature. And you see them and you go, this is brilliant. You know, you can sort of see, but you could have never figured out that other people would also find it brilliant.
Oh, I was with you right up till but you could never have figured out that other. I think those of us who read and enjoy young adult literature as adults, but also with young readers, when we read a book of that kind of quality and impact and engagement, know it. Yeah.
You can tell.
Yes. I will say one concrete thing to back that up, which is Walter the librarian at Girls Middle School said to me and everybody when he published this book early on, hey, there's this new book out. It's about a kid who hides in a cupboard with a scar. You should read it. This is going to be a really big bestseller. And he predicted Harry Potter going through the roof. So librarians and people like Jennifer, I think she's being modest. I mean, they absolutely have the ability to kind of tell and know what's going to hit.
And I think that's part of the purpose of the literary awards that are out there. That's a way that librarians and authors and publishers try to say, we think these are the books that are destined for this kind of next life. I mean, that for the most part, young adult literature has a short shelf life with a lot of rapid turnover for some of the reasons we were talking about before. But when books win an award or they get that gold foil label on the cover or they hit the mega bestseller status, then they're around for a long time for all of us to enjoy and for the next generations to enjoy.
And we're the better for it. Thank you so much, Jennifer, for coming. What a fun show. And thank you, all of you, for listening to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. If you missed any of this episode, listen anytime on demand with the SiriusXM app, on iTunes, and on SoundCloud.
From the campus of Stanford University, this has been Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope.